HIV/AIDS acquired at birth may be far more common in the developing world than was thought. That's according to research done in Zimbabwe among 300 adolescents admitted to hospital for a variety of complaints, not necessarily HIV. Nearly half of these children and young adults tested positive for the virus, and the scientists were able to show that HIV was acquired from their mothers by so-called vertical transmission rather than by sexual transmission. Rashida Farand of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
What used to be assumed was that children who were infected by their mothers through vertical HIV transmission would, in the absence of treatment, have a very, very high risk of dying in the first few years of life. And so without treatment, it was assumed that about 50% would be dead by 2 years.
And it would be reasonable to assume that children and young adults would mostly be free of HIV then?
That's absolutely correct, and that has been the assumption by healthcare providers and policymakers.
So what did you do to put this to the test?
Okay, so we don't really have much by way of survival data on older children, so it's been very difficult to get an estimate of whether children do live longer. But we investigated the prevalence of HIV infection amongst adolescents attending two hospitals in Harare, Zimbabwe, and we investigated HIV prevalence and the cause of admission to hospital.
How did you do this?
We did an anonymous HIV prevalence amongst adolescents being admitted to hospital for any reason other than for pregnancy. We also offered HIV counseling and testing to every participant. And we then conducted a series of investigations to investigate the cause of admission to hospital, including doing sort of tests to find out what infections that come up with, x-rays, and protocol based on what they were presenting with.
And what, in fact, did you find?
What we found was that 46% of adolescents admitted to hospital were HIV infected. What we also found was that not only were infections the commonest cause of admission and particularly common in HIV-infected adolescents, but they also had a very high burden of chronic problems that were not necessarily infection-related. So, for example, we found a very high rate of stunting or growth failure, delayed puberty. We also found a high prevalence of chronic lung and heart disease, all in keeping with chronic complications of HIV that were not necessarily infection-related.
Does this mean, then, that you were getting vertical infection from mother to child, or could they have been infected by other means?
We explore the possible mode of transmission in all our participants. What we found was that there was a high prevalence of maternal orphanhood, long-standing history of chronic ill health, dating back from early days of life. We also found a very low rate of herpes simplex virus 2 prevalence, which is a sexually transmitted infection very strongly associated with HIV. And in fact, although numbers were small, marriage was not associated with being HIV infected. The combination of findings of stunting and growth failure, as well as the high incidence of maternal orphanhood and all these chronic complications and the low prevalence, very low prevalence of HSV2 infection, are all very much in keeping with vertical infection, long-term survival following vertical infection.
Why should a low rate of HSV infection indicate that HIV is more likely?
Vertical HIV is more likely. The reason is that HSV2, as I said, is a sexually transmitted infection, and it's very strongly associated with HIV acquisition, particularly amongst young people in Africa.
Okay, so if the kids were getting herpes simplex virus, they would probably have got it sexually, and as they didn't have it, then that means that they got their HIV from their parents, from their mother.
That's right. I mean, the low prevalence of HSV2, although it doesn't sort of confirm mode of transmission, is very in keeping with vertical transmission, because in the rates that are found in Africa in young people range from sort of 15 to 20%, and we found rates of around 1%.
This is, of course, pretty horrifying to find that half of all of this group, young, promising people, have HIV. What, in fact, have you learned about HIV from this, and what does it all imply?
I think the main thing that we've learned is that older children are also at risk of vertically acquired infection. And I think that message has not really gotten out there. And as a result of that, these children haven't really been the focus of HIV diagnosis and care programs. The other thing that we've learned is that they're at not only high risk of infections, but a lot of chronic complications, the ones I've alluded to earlier, which may not necessarily be reversible if HIV treatment is delayed. The other thing that we've learned is that diagnosis needs to be achieved much earlier if we are going to impact on this group, and also that care services need to be scaled up really urgently and provision of tailored care, because adolescents are not little children and they're not adults. It's a group that's sort of fallen through the net because most young adults or adolescents are looked after by adults and they're not the same.
And because the epidemic began so early in Zimbabwe, is there a chance of discovering whether some people are immune to the effects of HIV?
I think this population provides a real window of opportunity to study correlates of slow progression or protection from HIV. It is certainly possible that there is something unique about these children's immune systems or the fact that the virus is different. We don't know that, but there is definitely an opportunity for us to learn about about immune protection from HIV in this group in particular.
Rashida Farand of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has been working with the Biomedical Research Institute in Harare. For Audio News from the London School, I'm Peter Goodwin.